Welcome to the NAPA Podcast, a pilot series of 8 podcasts focusing on practitioner careers brought to you by the National Association for the Practice of Anthropology. For more information, please visit our website at practicinganthropology.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Hello, this is Terry Redding and welcome to the NAPA Podcast Series. It is November 23rd, 2013. And we're here this morning with Mary Odell Butler. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Terry.
Thank you for being with us.
And oh, my pleasure.
Like, if you could tell us a little bit about your career at Battelle. First, what is Battelle, and what did you do while you were there?
Okay, I'd be happy to do that. Battelle is a 501c3 technical services firm. It's not a place I would have thought there was a job for an anthropologist. Battelle's primary mission is to, and I quote, put technology to work in the service of humankind. I have no idea how they defined me in, but they did, and I'm very pleased that they did. For my 20 years at Battelle, most of the work I did was program evaluations for federal agencies. This means that the agencies had something they were trying to do in the community to achieve some end. And they had a series of activities that were designed to do that, and my job was to go in and see if the activities were being done effectively, whether they were reaching the right people, and whether they were achieving what the agency hoped that they would achieve.
Okay, can you give us an example of that? Like, what would you do, and how would you design that? What was your role in that process? Was that part of a team effort?
Yes. I almost always worked in teams. Occasionally I had another anthropologist on the team, but usually the people I had on the teams were people like sociologists, psychologists, statisticians with various kinds of expertise. So this was very interdisciplinary work. The projects were developed collaboratively, so we all sat down around a table, looked at the problem, and figured out an approach to it. Usually this happened when we did a proposal rather than when we actually got the funding, so that when the funding came in, we had already put the team together and we had already figured out an interdisciplinary approach to resolving the problem.
Mm-hmm. Were there lots of anthropologists working at Battelle? Mm-hmm. Battelle is a large organization. The headquarters is in Columbus, Ohio.
That's right.
Is that
uh-huh.
right?
That's right.
And then they have offices in DC,
everywhere.
Seattle. Okay. Okay.
Right. Battelle has, at the time I left, 15,000 employees.
Wow.
They're located on, I think, every continent, and there are dozens and dozens of offices in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So geographically, you could work for Battelle and be almost anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And you were in the DC office, Washington DC, or
Arlington? Yeah. I was in Arlington.
More specific, right. Mm-hmm. And were there other, I know that you, for example, brought in a lot of
anthropologists,
either as staff or as interns, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So there was more than just you there.
That's correct.
There were other ones. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
When I first got there, I was the only anthropologist.
Okay.
In fact, I had been identified as an anthropologist in the proposal that was submitted to the Centers for Disease Control for the project, the overall big project that I was working on. CDC wanted an anthropologist, but they weren't sure why. So it was just me in the beginning. The kinds of projects we did for them, and particularly our ability to get behind the numbers, was something that was very valued at CDC, as well as in other kinds of federal agencies. We did projects for CDC, but also for organizations like HRSA, NIH, the Kaiser Family Foundation, a couple of states. We did program evaluations wherever anybody needed one, but they were all in public health.
Mm-hmm. All okay, public health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So, what would a typical evaluation entail? How would you put together the team? What sort of things would you do to evaluate a program? How does one go about evaluating a public health program?
Sure. Let me give you a quick example. I worked on a project a few years ago to evaluate whether primary care docs were talking to HIV positive men who have sex with men about STD prevention. STDs are transmitted by the same way that HIV AIDS, and this group was, and STDs make the transmission of the AIDS virus more likely. So this was a critical public health problem. We got a proposal and we developed an approach that involved, first of all, developing a written protocol to keep everybody on the same page as we went through the research. Then we did, probably about 8 institutional review board clearances, something important in doing any kind of social research. And then we did a 3-type study. We did a survey of providers in several different cities. We did site visits to 8 cities, and on those site visits, we interviewed the immediate healthcare providers, both nurses and physician's assistants and physicians. We went out and looked at we did participant observation in STD clinics, and we did in-depth interviewing on whether this kind of counseling was happening, and if not, what were the barriers to it. And then we compiled quantitative and qualitative data. We analyzed the quantitative data using SAS, as I recall, and the qualitative data we processed through QSR Nudis, but some kind of a text analysis software. And when we got all of those different kinds of data analyzed, then we had to put them together to answer a single set of questions. Were HIV positive MSM getting these services? What were the facilitators and barriers to their getting these services? And finally, from the quantitative data, whether these services had an impact on STD prevention interventions. Mm-hmm, and we had we had quantitative data for that.
So in general, would you say that mixed methods are really important?
Critical.
In almost all evaluations.
Critical.
Right.
Critical. There are evaluations that are small enough so that they're largely qualitative if they're exploratory. They may be largely quantitative if they're follow-on evaluations and people already know what they're looking for. But almost always, they're mixed method evaluations. So it's very smart to get informed in areas that you may need to bring to the table to design and analyze these evaluation studies.
Okay. Now, when you got your PhD and got out, and we'll skip some of the early parts of your career, of your illustrious career, because we're going to talk more about the future and the present with you.
Okay.
What sort of skills did you find were really critical from anthropology that you applied at your work in evaluation with Patel?
The most critical thing that I learned from anthropology that served me in the beginning and continues to serve me today is the ability to shut up and listen. And that comes from ethnography. I mean, you ask your informant a question and you don't talk over them. You listen to what they say rather than what you think they should say. Believe it or not, this is a fairly rare skill out there. Many people, even highly trained scientists, come into a piece of social research with more of a knowledge of what's going on than is absolutely useful. Sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes the things you think are wrong. Sometimes you're taken in directions you would not have anticipated if you weren't being open and allowing people to talk to you. This is the most basic of ethnographic skills. I would recommend that anybody practice it a bunch. You can do it in social situations, and it's often very informative because you hear what people are saying. The other thing that was useful was I was a pre-med major, so I had a pretty good understanding of health, illness, and I was comfortable with statistics, which I'm not a statistician, but I was comfortable dealing with them. That was critically important in my career because of the mixed method approaches.
Right, okay. And then did you find, when you were at Patel, skills outside of anthropology? What was needed, or what sort of things did you have to get up to speed on that you did not get in anthropology to do your job?
Ooh, baby. I had to learn computers.
Okay.
I had to learn what computers do with data and how they compartment them. you can't design a database unless you understand what's happening. Statistics, I had taken as an undergraduate, but and used in my dissertation, so I had that coming in. But if you don't, once again, I recommend that. What else? Economics. I had an introductory undergraduate course to economics that probably has served me better than, you know, most of the rest of my undergraduate degree. So it's these sort of general understandings of factors that make the world operate the way it does that are useful. So, you know, you kind of don't know what they are until they show up. But one thing about anthropologists is anthropologists are very good at learning on the job and at teaching themselves stuff. And that has been more useful than I can say, just the ability to come up to speed fast on things.
Now, you did project management while at Patel.
Yes, I did. I was director of the office that I was in for about 7 years.
And what skills do you think, again, how are anthropologists skilled at being, or are they skilled at being managers? What makes a good anthropological manager?
If you have been into the field and assembled a field study, you're probably a pretty good manager. For me, I think the most important thing, once again, is people skills. If you've had experience with an employer, you know the difference between an employer that can communicate with you and an employer that cannot. So, once again, shutting up and listening was really important. Also, the ability to line multiple things up in a row and figure out and prioritize them. You know, you have to be able to think in terms of systems. And that's another thing that anthropologists do pretty well, because we're holistic. And that holisticness is a help in management, tremendous help in management.
Great. And you have since retired from Patel.
Yep.
And not that you were retired from life by any means. So tell us some of your post-Patel career projects that you are working on, or what you're doing now.
You know, retirement has meant to me an opportunity to do many of the things I dreamed of doing in anthropology and didn't have time to do when I had a full-time job. I did actually retire for about a year, and then I got bored, and I was offered an adjunct position at the University of Maryland to teach their to teach evaluation anthropology in their graduate program. So I developed a course based on all of this experience. I delivered it face-to-face at the University of Maryland. It was successful. And I began to get calls from around the country from people who wanted to take this course. Now I'm teaching it online at the University of North Texas. I was kind of nervous about doing that because I didn't know how it would work, but it actually, you do get the contact with students, and you do get the intellectual challenge that had always meant so much for me in teaching. So I think another thing that this shows is that you have to move into the 21st century. If you're uncomfortable with computers, iPhones, iPods, iPads, all of the eyes, then you can navigate pretty well in this world. If you don't have those skills, you better get them. One of my big notes from being at this meeting yesterday was in very big letters, figure out Twitter. Because I don't understand Twitter, but it has become abundantly clear to me at this meeting that I should. So you have to remain flexible in terms of your relationship with technology.
Is that a skill that you find the younger generation is embracing, picking up on, or pretty savvy with?
Oh, big time. They help me all the time. And because I'm teaching, I can ask them questions, and they know the answers. I'm teaching on Blackboard, which I absolutely loathe. It's a terribly user-unfriendly program, but it disturbs me far more than it disturbs my students. So when I get trapped in Blackboard, I just put up an announcement saying, "Help, I'm stuck again," and they send me the answer, because they just don't think like I do, and I hope we're helping pull each other into the 21st century.
Excellent. And you do some independent consulting as well?
Well, first of all, I have a job with a consulting firm where I am a part-time employee, and I've continued to do evaluations for CDC under that job. It's very part-time, but it's nice because I get brought in for projects that interest me, and I don't have to do the ones I don't.
Okay.
The other thing I'm doing is I'm preparing a book on evaluation anthropology. I've got to find a better title than that. It will never sell if I call it that. But I'm trying to develop a book that synthesizes anthropological understandings and anthropological skills with those of the field of evaluation. It's important for you to know that evaluation is a discipline on its own. In order to be an effective evaluator, you have to read up and get smart about evaluation. I didn't really know what it was when I started doing it, but once again, I refer back to anthropologists being good at learning things. But you must learn it. You cannot, anthropology will not get you through a job in it as an evaluator.
Okay.
So or anthropology of, alone.
Right. That has evolved now, I think. The field of evaluation, would that be in the past 20 years?
Oh, yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I would say
something different than what it was now.
When I started, it was really different. And when I started, the first thing I had to do was an analysis of 1,200 death certificates for a number of things. And it was a multivariate analysis, which I knew how to do because I did one in my dissertation. But that was what evaluation was in those days. And it began to change as particularly CDC came to understand that they had a hard time getting enough information for action from their numbers. I mean, numbers will tell you how much is out there, how strong something is. It will even tell you where it is, but it won't tell you what it is or why it is. And so it's become increasingly important for people who do evaluations to have an anthropologist on the team for the understanding of culture, the understanding of qualitative methods, and the ability to probe out issues that people are facing. So it's good to be an anthropologist, but
that's
not enough.
That was going to be my next question, so thank you for anticipating that. Was what do anthropologists bring to the table as evaluators? And
Yeah. First of all, you can shut up and listen. Did I say that before?
I think you might have mentioned that. Yeah.
Qualitative analysis is a big deal. It's one of the most challenging parts of doing research under contract, because everybody underestimates how much effort and time it takes. Anybody who is a graduate student in anthropology knows perfectly well how long it takes and how difficult it is. If you can get good at something like, NUTAS or Atlas TI or one of those things, that's a very important skill because most people can't think that way. They want you to count up qualitative responses. So you need to understand that. You also need to have available to you the methodology, by which I mean the theoretical understanding of the connection between methods and what you find. You have to have a good knowledge of qualitative methodology so that you can build evaluations that will link to the evidence that you need to build to convince the public that your evaluation is scientifically valid.
Right. If someone came to you and they said, Mary, I'm an academic, I've been teaching for 10 years, X number of years, and I really want to get out of the academy, and I think evaluation is something I would like to do, how would you advise that person?
Wow. Well, this was my experience. I got into evaluation mid-career, and we won't belabor that. My trip was kind of a random walk into evaluation. Things are a lot better now. There are a lot of supports for evaluators in AAA. I would recommend anybody interested in evaluation cruise the website of the American Evaluation Association. It has jobs, it has tips, it has workshops, it has training opportunities. I would encourage you to do two things. One is to get smart about evaluation as smart as you can. You don't have to be an expert, but get smart enough to talk to other people about evaluation. Look at the jobs on the American Evaluation Association site. You do not have to be trained as an evaluator to get a job in evaluation. And they like anthropologists. Look at some of those jobs. And finally, I think the most important thing that I've seen in people who have made successful mid-career transitions is that they, first of all, they understand how organizations work. They've had employers. They understand how the academic thing is put together. So they're not so intimidated by organizations. And the other important thing, I forgot, but it will come back to me. I got it. It's important to interview for information. Find anybody you can find who has worked in evaluation and ask them the same things that I've been asked here. You know, what do they do? How do they do it? What's good about it? What's bad about it? And often if you interview people for information, they will refer you to other people. And sooner or later, as you're interviewing people for information and as you get smarter about evaluation, someone will offer you a job.
But
it takes patience and it takes persistence.
Right.
But, you know, I would, if you're discontented with your academic job, I would so much encourage you to do this, because my career as an anthropologist really took off when I began to evaluate. I mean, it's just a wonderful place to do ethnography.
Great. And how long do you think that process would take? Again, going back to someone who's mid-career, they want to transition out to gain a sufficient pool of knowledge and information and contacts before they're really either ready to make the leap or between the time they might leave the academy and get their first job offer.
Wow, it depends on how hard you can work on it, given that you already have a job. It took me 3 years. During the interim periods, I was an economist. I was hired as an economic analyst, and I also was hired as an SAS programmer. It took me a couple of steps. Don't quit your job until you, at least until you go out, until you have some idea of what evaluation is, and until you've interviewed some people for information. Interviewing is the thing we do better than anything, and you're doing this for yourself. I would say if you, for example, are coming up for tenure in 2015 and you're pretty sure that you'd like to move by then so you don't have to do all that work, I would encourage you to start 2 years before your tenure decision. But if you don't have time to do that, there's no time like the present. So just get going.
Great. Well, thanks for being with us, Mary. Is there anything else that you would like to say, anything else that's important that we haven't covered that you'd like to promote, describe, put forth?
I would like you to consider this option to evaluate. Anthropologists become more and more important every day that goes by in evaluation. I have a colleague who is a fairly well-noted quantitative evaluator who said to me at an AEA meeting that, you know, I almost feel uncomfortable here because everybody's an anthropologist. So, you know, he was exaggerating, but it was true. I was really comfortable at that meeting. So it's a really good place for anthropologists. Please connect with the resources that NAPA provides and with the resources that AAA provides. AAA has worked very hard to become more friendly to people looking for jobs in practice, and they put in place a number of initiatives to help you do that. I think one of the most important things that AAA has done through NAPA is to develop what becomes a better and more sophisticated series of workshops every year. Workshops are taught by people who are experienced in the practice of particular things, and they're a really good way to get smart. They're fast, they're inexpensive, and they give you the anthropological fix on things. So use the resources that are available to you within anthropological associations to center yourself and to get the support of anthropologists who are doing these jobs as you move into it on your own.
Right. Excellent suggestion. That just reminds me, what about mentoring? How would someone go about getting mentored if they wanted to make that transition?
Since I've just about always lived without mentors, it's a little hard for me to answer that. However, I think if I was starting out in it today, there is an evaluation anthropology interest group that has a website, and I think it's evalanth.org, but I'm not sure. But you can find it on the NAPA website. we exchange information and we do sessions and we get together at meetings and we develop educational opportunities ad infinitum. So look in the professional associations, particularly in NAPA, for help. We offer all kinds of help to people that is not often taken advantage of as much as it should be. And you know, if you do that, you will identify people who are anthropologists who are willing to mentor you. There also is a mentoring program within NAPA, I think. Is it still there?
Right.
There's an online mentoring program within NAPA that I would encourage you to link up to, because they can, by linking up there, they can find you someone who is eager to be a mentor and who has experience in just about any field of practice you choose. So there are things available here. Please use them.
Mary, thank you very much. It's been wonderful speaking with you and taking this time.
Thank you.
Wonderful information. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and be sure to check out the other podcasts in our pilot series. For more information, please visit the NAPA website at practicinganthropology.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.